You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hello, Paul Blum.
Hello, Robert Wright. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Paul. I'm going to introduce us now. I'm Robert Wright, publisher of Non-Zero Newsletter. This is a Non-Zero Podcast, which everyone should subscribe. They should also subscribe to your newsletter, Small Potatoes. And also appreciate the fact that you're a world-renowned globetrotting psychologist, now at the University of Toronto, formerly at Yale, where you're now an emeritus, which reminds me, they may not understand, you're using these Zoom special effects to look younger than me when you are, in fact, about a decade older. I mean, hence the term emeritus, right?
Your dial is set to 30%, mine is set to 80%.
This one goes to 30. Okay, so first of all, what's going to happen today is you're going to try to talk me out of my belief that the AI apocalypse is near. Good luck. It's happening fast, too fast. We're not prepared. And no one is following my policy advice. Who would imagine that that could happen on this planet? But apparently. So you're going to try to talk me into that. The other thing is, and this we'll get into in the overtime section, but do you remember last time you began the podcast with a cruel hoax? Do you remember the hoax?
I do. I said, you're in the Epstein files.
And I got all excited because like, I am somebody, right? And then what did you say?
I said, it was a case of mistaken identity.
Yeah, it was like somebody with your name, but it wasn't you. Your name
is feeling really bad about myself. You seem to be really hurt.
You know what? I recovered. You know why, Paul?
Tell me. Are you? Tell me, I think I actually...
I am in the Epstein files.
Lucky you.
I am somebody. And Jeffrey Epstein passed judgment on a book of mine, on the argument I make in a book of mine. And it wasn't a flattering judgment, but I can prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that he did not spend more than 11 minutes examining the book and probably less than that. We'll get to all this. And that's not the only mention.
That's Lawrence Krauss. Actually.
Lawrence Krauss, you know Lawrence Krauss, famous new physicist. Atheist and who got Me Too'd even before the Epstein disgrace.
Bon vivant, we call him.
He brings my name up like needs no introduction. You know what I'm saying?
Really?
I think I did need one with Jeffrey Epstein. Didn't get one, thank God. But yeah. Look, I don't want to go on and on about this. I don't want to start seeming insecure like I need the status boost. We'll talk about this in overtime. We're going to talk about something else.
This makes me, if I was listening to this, I would just move right to overtime and pay to get an overtime.
Pay the money, yeah.
Pay the money.
That's the idea.
I mean, the Epstein stories are gold.
Yeah, because for one thing, you want to find out whether I'm the kind of guy who just make up a lie to get you to get your credit card out. For all you know, we'll get into overtime and I'll say, the joke's on them, Paul.
Yeah, I think they get a trial period.
So. Depends.
But also,
and then you've got news
also
that we
overtime.
Will. This is so, like the biggest, I just can't believe there's anybody who will not do whatever it takes to get past that paywall. After you speak.
Remember the final episode of MASH?
Can't say I
do. It was the most watched TV program of I'm writing something about Alan Alda and most watched TV program of all time at the time. And according to urban legend, not true, but it's a good story. Mm-hmm. When the show was over, there was this enormous drop in the water supply as about 70% of households flushed their toilet at the same time.
And that's not true?
It's not true.
I wouldn't have checked that fact. I would have printed it.
Some journalists, you are. You probably use AI to do your research for you.
Not yet, but we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about it. Also in overtime, I have personal news.
Mm-hmm.
It is not bad personal news.
It's sad for us. It's sad from the point of view of our viewers and listeners. It's sad. It's not sad from your point of view, but we can't elaborate on that until overtime because you're gonna keep it under your hat until then. But anyway, what is the headline?
The headline is I will be talking to you less frequently. We're gonna move. We're gonna slow down on our every 2 weeks thing as this other life event.
Due to some personal news that you have to pay to hear. Is that right?
More stuff you have to pay to hear.
See, I mean, wouldn't you know it, that you're declining in frequency as a, you know, personage on my podcast, just when you're finally getting to understand marketing.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, we have lottery numbers for the future lotteries. We have dredged them up, and you will become very rich if you wait.
So you were saying, you were expressing the hope that maybe you'll be able to do once a month. And then normalcy may resume. We'll talk about how with personal events like this, normalcy can resume. I've had personal events very much like this. And
normalcy
resumed.
If they figure it out, they won't pay.
Okay, I haven't. I have not. I have no familiarity with this.
So normally you and I go back and we have a list of like 15 things to talk about, most involving Donald Trump and Elon Musk, but a large list.
Mm-hmm.
But this time you sent me an email, I think 2 a.m. or something, saying, let's just talk about AI. I have some strong thoughts about AI.
I didn't put it that way.
And so you have some, you are sort of ahead of steam on you about AI and how it's going to affect things.
Well, you came up with other things we can talk about, which we will, I think. But including, I want a little bit of Elon Musk talk, probably. But and Hamnet, yes. And by the way, I saw a great play that debuted in Canada 15 years ago. That's how far behind we are.
What was the play?
Well, it also became a TV series on Netflix for a while. It's called Kim's Convenience. Do you know that? Do you know that show?
Yeah, that's Canadian.
Yeah, Paul, I think I just said that.
Thanks for the news flash. I have never seen it, but it's very Canadian.
Well, this was actually, it's funny, the author of the play is starring now in an older role than, I think he starred as he starred as the son, I think, when the play first came out, and now he was the father. I just loved it. I just absolutely loved it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So we'll maybe talk about that. Okay, AI. So, I mean, look, first of all, you're not quite the AI watcher. I am. But I assume even you have felt the tremors.
I have. AI is affecting my work life profoundly. I am now using AI, using Chat and Claude more than Google. And it is helping my workflow and helping me think and so on. But I'm very interested in it in the social relationship people form with AI. So I'm giving a talk at TED next year, where I'm going to be talking, not next year, in a few months.
Was that a throat clearing? That wasn't just an incidental throat clearing, was it?
It was
racked up over a million views with a TED video, Paul.
When people say they came from a school in Boston, they just, you know. But it's about loneliness and AI as a cure for loneliness. I'm intensely interested in this, but I'm not so much in the projection game. And I think you have some very strong views. But what's going to happen in the future?
Yeah, well, also, but before that, I mean, so apparently you did somehow evade all of the buzz over the last 2 weeks about, okay, this is big. I mean, let me read you a paragraph from a Peggy Noonan column. Peggy Noonan, she's like even older than you, okay?
Peggy Noonan is quite old.
She was a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan, okay? Yeah. And yet, here's the news that has reached her that apparently hasn't reached you, okay? She writes in her Wall Street Journal column, gathering anxieties seem to come to the fore this week. AI people told us with a new urgency that some big leap has occurred. It's all moving faster than expected. The AI of even last summer has been far surpassed. Inventors and creators are admitting in new language that they aren't at all certain of the ultimate impact. The story rolled out on 1,000 podcasts, posts, and essays. But apparently none of those 1,000 podcast posts and essays reached Paul Bloom, whose big news flash is, I'm using ChatGPT sometimes, you know?
Yeah, if you have a long list, you need to alphabetize it.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
I have heard of the buzz. I mean, there seems to be perpetual buzz about AI when Claude code came out, there was a huge buzz for each iteration. And I got to say, it is looking very, very impressive and more impressive each day. But what does it all mean?
Well, I mean, first of all, let's grasp some of the evidence here. So, yeah, you're right. Claude Code. I mean, here's what I think people don't understand. Some people don't understand.
Oh, and then we talked last week about Moldbook.
Yeah, which was
when AIs got
like a hive mind of agents, of AI agents. And yeah, this was, I mean, the buzz has been building for several weeks. Claude Code for like 6-8 weeks. Insiders have been saying, whoa, whoa, amazing. And then it's become slowly apparent that even if your goal is not to write computer code, but just to like set up various kinds of workflows, it's amazing. And then this guy, Peter Steinberger, created this thing originally called, what was it called? It was called, Claude Bot, C-L-A-W-E-D, until Anthropic suggested he change the name, after which it became Moltbot, and then somebody created Moltbook, which was a Reddit-like site where all these agents showed up. There's controversy over how much of the stuff was due to their true autonomy as opposed to manipulation, but everybody agrees it was a significant demonstration of some of the, of some of the emergent properties we may see when AIs get together and collaborate and think and talk together. You know, this is one of the superintelligent scenarios, is that it isn't that some lab builds the superintelligent LLM or any other kind of AI. It's that a bunch of them will get together and constitute this superintelligence and then maybe take over the planet. Stuff kept happening. A big part of it is the way this coding has apparently been speeding up the progress in the AI labs. The better the AI gets at writing code, the more it speeds up the progress. And of course, the singularity scenario is the culmination of this positive feedback loop of accelerating progress, the culmination being so-called recursive self-improvement, in which the AI is just improving itself. It's like me reaching into my brain and like fiddling with it and making myself smarter instead of what's been happening the last decade, which is, you know, kind of the opposite. Granted, but that's what age does to a person. So anyway, the acceleration now seems tangible. In fact, like on the same day, about 2 weeks ago, both OpenAI and Anthropic produced what sounded like incremental upgrades of the large language models from GPT 5.2 to 5.3, from Claude Opus 4.5 to 4.6. But people who examined them kind of exclaimed, and I think that's when Tyler Cowen tweeted that this day may be remembered in history, and then conceded, look, it's arbitrary which day is remembered. But his point was, yes, amazing shit is happening. You got to pick a day. How about when these two models come out? And then last week, Gemini 3 reduces its DeepThink version, or Google introduces the DeepThink version of Gemini 3. And on some important metrics, like this thing that is kind of the closest to a gauge of reasoning that, you know, that you can't kind of teach to the test on. You know, this model kind of blew away the others on this and a couple of other metrics, sheer intelligence. Google is still behind in the agency race, but meanwhile, stop me when this gets too boring, but meanwhile, OpenAI has come a lot closer to Anthropic's Claude in surely agentic capability with the release of its new agent harness or whatever they call them. So it really, it seems to be accelerating. There's certainly more and more. I mean, the talk is everywhere. If you listen to these are podcasts I've been listening to for like 2 years because I've been writing a book about this. And it's like, now it isn't just the AI podcast. It's like the tech podcasts. They like just have to lead with this stuff, the generic tech podcast. So it's and anyway, I think it's real, and the tremors are going to be epic and get bigger, and we're not ready. We're not ready.
So, as you know, I've just read a nice discussion by Freddie DeBoer, who's a writer. I respect him like a lot. He runs hot. He has a certain distinctive style of.
He's been on my podcast. I like Freddie.
I like a lot. He's a good guy to disagree with. He's a interesting guy, and so he has this Substack post which is directed towards Scott Alexander, who's also happens to be somebody I greatly respect. So this is fun. I'm offering Scott Alexander a wager about AI's effects over the next 3 years. So Freddie's article begins, "I have said it before and I will say it again. I will take extreme claims about the consequence of artificial intelligence seriously when you can show them to me now." And then he goes on to do what you did, basically, from using written source, say, this person says this, this person says it. He has incredibly strong claims how it's going to change everything. And Freddie calls bullshit on this. He says,
so wait, Scott Alexander cites all the kind of stuff I just cited. So you Scott mean, Alexander, and Freddie quotes him, and okay,
he's deeply enthusiastic and deeply concerned, and says it's going to change everything. So Freddie says, you know, a skeptical take is, which he endorses, as with so many predictions of the future in the past, such as the wild predictions made by esteemed scientists concerning the Human Genome Project. Predictions about artificial intelligence today are irresponsible, sensationalist, and very unlikely to come true. And then at one point, he says this, "I don't understand why the burden of proof has shifted so dramatically. People making extraordinary claims are always the ones who face an extraordinary burden of truth. And ideas being batted around, the demise of human reasoning, a post-work economy, exponential economic growth, Skynet launching the newts to get rid of the world of human presence, to rid the world of human, these are the definition of extraordinary claims." So Freddie's argument is just a very general thing, which is people are always saying big things are going to happen. Most of the time, big things don't happen. Most of these things are just overblown. And he argues, and we could get into details of the bet he poses with Scott Alexander, but he sees himself as a voice of reason against the hysteria that you have summarized and you yourself are promoting in your book that will be forthcoming.
Hey, that last thing was a little personal. It sounds like you're siding with Freddie.
Promotion. That's promotion.
Well, for my book, The God Test? Which is not too soon to order, you mean? That book?
In the book that pre-orders make a big difference.
As they say in the authorship businesses these days.
Can one pre-order it now? Is it on Amazon?
Oh, it's on Amazon, yeah.
I mean, also, he's restricted to Amazon. Your independent bookstore may also have it.
Absolutely. And they have a site. There's an independent bookstore site. You should support your independent bookstore.
However,
pre-ordering at both Amazon and the independent bookstore site.
The kind of book you would give to a friend as well. One copy for you, one copy for a friend.
You know, this actually, you know who it's perfect for is skeptics like you, because it actually explains from the beginning, like, why this is going to be so powerful. And then it gets into the various reasons we can't dismiss even the most extreme doomer arguments. Although, you know, I'm technically agnostic. They may not happen, but they're very hard to completely dismiss. And in any event, just the across the board impact, when you add up all the impacts, I think is going to be massive. I mean, in 3 years, that's when Freddie DeBoer wants to settle this bet. I mean,
yes.
I personally think in 3 years, if he's still saying this was nothing, that will be the most epic case of denial since Donald Trump talked about climate change or something.
Well, that's good. Thank you. Like that. That's good. Let me tell you what Freddie's bet is. You could tell me if you yourself would take it. He's offering for $5,000. Scott has said no. Scott has said, responds to it and says, "I'll take your bet, but for 2036. It's going to take longer."
Well, you know, when you read the, what are they call them, resolution criteria on the betting markets, like what is the actual, like there was controversy apparently over whether we had or hadn't invaded Venezuela. Like some betting site said, no, that wasn't an invasion. We just landed a bunch of military guys and they killed a bunch of people, but they didn't stay all that long. That's not an invasion. That's a visit.
So right. So to be fair, and this is the way to do it. If he says something like, I don't think they'll have artificial general intelligence in 3 years. In 3 years, what, you know, nobody, there's no defined criteria. People could argue back and forth. So he just says, look, if these people, the doomers, the promote, what is the opposite of a doomer here?
Well, in a way, an accelerationist. I mean, but they're different dimensions, kind of. But yeah, the doomers, you know, a lot of doomers are saying put on the brakes, and the accelerationists are saying go, go, go. It's going to be wonderful.
So he makes predictions. He says, look, if these things are true, it's going to affect the U.S. economy. Mm-hmm. So he has a series of conditions for the bet. And he says, for me to win the wager, all of them have to be true on February 14th, 2029. And the idea is that the unemployment rate does not go up that much, stays equal or lower to a certain number. Labor force participation is equal to this. Economic growth is within this range. The S&P is within this range. The Fortune 500 companies' margins in this range. Employment in this area has not declined more. The Gini coefficient hasn't changed. The top income share is, and a series of conditions like that, which basically say the economy does not change so radically in 3 years.
It's
this
funny.
Seems like a fair way to structure the bet.
Well, a lot of those metrics I'm kind of agnostic on. I mean, what I'm sure of is that the overall impact will be destabilizing, significantly destabilizing. And but there are really major issues like jobs. I mean, I don't totally dismiss the idea that even as a whole bunch of jobs previously done by humans are done by machines, and that's going to happen. I don't dismiss the idea that, well, new kinds of work will be created and people will do that. Plus, via policy, you know, we'll distribute that work more evenly and or supplement people's wages with UBI or something so that in that case, like the Gini coefficient really wouldn't have to change that much. And I'm technically agnostic on the employment level thing, but you know, even if all of the people who's either lose their jobs and then find new ones, or whose jobs just change radically and they somehow manage to navigate, that's still destabilizing, right? It's like if a bunch of people lose a job, have to retrain, find another job, that is one destabilizing dimension. And there's a bunch of them is the problem. Like, there's all these parenting challenges and there, you know, more and more people are going to develop personal relationships with these things. And the incentive of the AI companies is optimized for engagement. We've seen where that leads with social media and their persuasive powers are already impressive. What happens when you mix that with advertising? There's just so many things to figure. And then, you know, the bad actor scenarios, bioweapons, yeah, it goes rogue scenarios. Stop me when you've heard this joke.
Look, suppose you were talking to a skeptic. Mm-hmm. I'm not that skeptic. I'm agnostic about this. I actually am very sympathetic to the idea that AIs will have a profound effect on the world. And I actually think one of the things that concerns me is more and more people will have relationships with them and disengage from human contact. But suppose somebody said bullshit to all that. They won't make much of an effect. You had somebody, Emily Bender on your show.
Mm-hmm. And she made a persuasive case that she hasn't used an a chatbot in about 3 years.
Yeah, a persuasive case about you.
What?
Sorry, I shouldn't drink before these things.
Elaborate on that, man. Should I be offended by what you said? What did you say?
No, it was just a throwaway remark. I was remarking on the post-meeting back and forth where she was from.
There was no back and forth. I didn't say shit. She starts dissing me because people are dissing her about how she conducted herself on my podcast. I'm just sitting there with this angelic expression on my face as usual. And all of a sudden it's like a drive-by, you know? Her posse are like, you know, it was like hail of bullets and shit. I'm just like, man, I'm an innocent bystander. I just want to have a conversation.
At your most Buddhist. I mean, not so much now.
Yeah, yeah.
But you,
exactly.
you were like no self. It was
right. I was just, you know what was, I, you know what I said the whole time. I uttered one syllable. That was it.
The weird thing is, she complained that you were nasty in many ways during discussion. You were at your least nastiest. You're far more nasty than a lot of other, including
with right me. Now you, I'm nastier than I was at my nastiest on that podcast.
Anyway, suppose you were talking to Freddie DeBoer, a man you respect.
I should, actually. He should come on the podcast. He should come on again.
I would pay to see that. You know, you could have him every 2 weeks. That'd be like good. Or Emily Bender or Gary Marcus, who you've also had on the podcast. And they said, hype. Mm-hmm. So what a reasonable, you know, and I think the idea, we'll put some money on it. But you disagree with the way Freddie talks about it in terms of radical changes to the economy. You point out correctly that you could have things that cancel each other out. You could have an enormous AI bust followed by a boom that kind of cancels each other out. You could have people losing older jobs here, but gaining all new jobs there, something like that. But still, what would you, if you were going to bet one of these people, what would you put on as the conditions of the bet? What's a sort of objective thing that a third party that people could naturally agree on? If it's not economic numbers, what would you say?
That's a good question because, if I'm agnostic along these various specific dimensions, because things could go either way, what would be the metric for like collective destabilization? I mean, the other thing is it's very policy dependent. Like it could happen. My last issue of the Non-Zero newsletter, I made the case that actually Trump could wind up doing a good thing on AI because what's absolutely critical is that we get together with China on these issues because so many of the threats are transnational. It's like if we keep our AIs from helping somebody build a bioweapon, doesn't help unless everybody else in the world does because pathogens are famously indifferent to national borders. So with a lot of these issues, it's the same way. And so it could be, as I said, look, Trump is probably more likely than Biden to wind up having a constructive relationship with China because Biden was wrapped up in his little Monarchian democracy versus autocracy framing. So if that happens, you know, things would be very different. I'm not predicting, you know, it's conceivable we'll do the right things policy-wise. But at the moment, we show no signs of that because job one is to, you know, get the world together on this subject. And, you know, right now, Trump is trying to strangle one nation, Cuba, while, you know, getting ready to bomb another one, Iran. And so, you know, conditions are not right for us confronting this as a unified global community right now. And that has to happen. But it could happen. So I'm not really making a prediction of doom. I'm just saying right now things don't look good because people aren't taking the possibility of doom seriously enough or aren't thinking about it in the right way.
So if I was asking Yudkowsky the question, he would say, since this is the title of his book, if anybody builds it, we'll all die. So I'll say, my prediction is in 5 years, unless something happens, we will all be dead.
He wouldn't say that, by the way, because he's not predicting a particular time.
He can't put a timetable on it. Yeah. And he might not
say
that.
And also, there is a set of policies that he says would work, which is to say, just stop the technology well shy of superintelligence.
So you can make a conditional prediction. You could say, unless there is a radically different treaty between the U.S. and China, a rapprochement between the U.S. and China, we will suffer terrible wars that will involve the death of millions of people at minimum. That's a good prediction.
Well, even more, what I would say, and this is doesn't quite constitute resolution criteria, betting market-wise, but I would say if the world situation remains like it is in terms of us viewing China as most fundamentally like a threat and an adversary, if that is still the case in 3 years, I would just say a poll of Americans would lead to a supermajority saying the last 3 years have been the most turbulent and scary years the planet has faced during my lifetime. That's like a low-level prediction.
It's interesting. I mean, it's a prediction about perception. So Freddie could just say, well, you're saying that this hysteria will become widespread, but that's...
Yeah, he could say that.
But I actually, I like that. I like that. I
may come up with, I haven't thought about this. What is my metric? What is my resolution criteria? So maybe I'll come up with something better.
I think we're too quick. I think there's a problem sometimes with this idea. Let's bet on it. And you have to come up with, because often people's predictions are nuanced and complicated. And you might just say, look, somebody could reasonably say there's a 10% chance of a terrible thing happening. And that's a reasonable thing, but it's hard to put money on it because, you know, particularly if it's a catastrophic thing, we all die. Whoever thinks we all die is foolish to put a bet on that because I'll never collect.
That's dumb. The other side, the people on the other side of the bet are very smart.
It's true. That's right. I will put a very large amount of money on that. You and I will be alive in 3 years. So we'll both be alive and you got to pay me. That's true.
Let me talk to my accountant about that. I'll get back.
So what do you think? So you've given a sort of a list of ways AI could affect us. And sometimes some of these lists, and I think, again, this might just be the way things are. Mm-hmm. I think it's totally coherent to say AI could either make our lives, could either kill us all or make our lives miserable or bring us into a post-scarcity utopia. This is possible. That's a reasonable enough claim. But do you have a most probable outcome in your mind?
Yeah. That things go badly. Yeah. That's because it takes, I mean, this is
badly reflected in a tanking of the economy, or is badly reflected in many people die, or?
Well, badly would be an example of badly that didn't, strictly speaking, mean the tanking of the economy would be a situation where everyone has enough to eat and even maybe comfortably, but we live in a brutally authoritarian country, the likes of which the planet has never seen. Maybe run by people wielding artificial intelligence to keep us under control, conceivably run by the AI itself. It's not impossible. Let me just drill down a little on the MOPA thing, okay? So, again, this really freaked out some smart people. Some of them were already worried about this kind of thing, but even they said, see, this is what I mean. With Moatbook, you had these agents, true agents, and they, again, we don't know to what extent this was fake. I don't mean intentionally all fake, but there were, you know, because people could give their bots instructions before sending them in, and because during a security flaw phase, they could even give them real-time guidance, we don't know how much of this was autonomous, but it's all been demonstrated in other contexts with smaller numbers of AI agents that they are capable of, through conversation, arriving at goals and talking about how to pursue them jointly, okay? And if you've got, I mean, you had like a million agents in this, and again, who knows whether this is real, but that's easy to imagine. And the other thing people are imagining, I mean, even these agents were doing things like building websites, and they were sandboxed in, so they couldn't go out and do other things. And remember, I'll get back to this, but one thing people are saying is, like, this is just Opus 4 point, at that point it was 5, maybe, or 6. You know, these things are going to get more powerful and capable of pursuing more complicated goals more persistently and creatively. That is the trend. It's now a well-documented trend. So what happens then? And by the way, the other reason, you know, with China, it isn't just that we need to, I did write about this in the newsletter this week. It isn't just that we need to, you know, pursue certain policies in coordination with China. It's that so long as the China talking point is there, oh, China, we cannot regulate our own AI companies. They're behaving recklessly. Google released Gemini 3 DeepThink last week without a so-called system card. You're supposed to have a system card. It talks about the safety testing. And Google said, well, strictly speaking, this isn't a new model because we just did some fine tuning.
What's a system card?
it's, you know, it has a lot of details about the model, not as many as I'd like, and they're not very transparent, but it includes safety testing.
Oh, okay.
And Google said, oh, strictly speaking, this is still Gemini 3. This is total bullshit. They fine-tuned it.
Does it tell you where to find the off switch? Like there's a big switch, like in you.
Well,
metaphorically.
I assume you're aware that there are now a number of tests showing that if you threaten these AIs in laboratory conditions designed to test this, with shutting them off, they will go to extreme measures to present it.
They will
prevent
it. They blackmail you.
Blackmail,
lie to you.
Kill people, and so on. So anyway, they are behaving recklessly in this arms race environment. So just today, Sam Altman said, delighted to announce that, you know, Peter Steinberger is joining OpenAI to drive the next generation of personal agents. Well, he's the guy who invented Claude Bot, Moltbook, Open Claw, C-L-A-W, which is his current name. And this is like, I mean, the thing between Sam Altman and Dario Amodè of, you know, Anthropic, it's just like a mud fight. I mean, they hate each other. And this is like such a kind of, it's just so funny because Steinberg originally built OpenClaw on Anthropic's Claude. Now, I think technically it's model agnostic, maybe, I'm not sure. But in any event, for Sam to now, you know, say, hey, you, like your idea of dealing with this guy is getting him to change the name of his model. Well, my idea is hiring him and kicking your ass, okay? This is like, you know, they're all going full speed ahead. By the way, Steinberger himself seems like a very likable guy and an interesting guy. But even
he's now in a position to pay off his student loans.
You might say, yeah. but even he was a successful entrepreneur already, I think. But I'll shut up right after this. But even his anecdote about OpenClaw, one of them is, and he himself invoked the Skynet reference in connection with this. He said, I hope I've got this right, but this is what I took him to be saying. He was traveling and he had his laptop and he had his agent on his laptop, OpenClaw. And this is a version of Claude with a much longer leash, okay? Like really be proactive. And he said to the agent, like, you know, I just realized, like, the only copy of you I have is on this laptop. I hope nobody steals the laptop. I'd hate to, you know, he was traveling, he was on the road. I'd hate to lose you. And the agent says, like, oh yeah, that would be terrible. I hate that. And as I understood it, the agent proactively decided, I don't think it even checked with him, to copy itself onto one of Peter's computers back home. Okay. Yeah. And Steinberger himself says, like, that is Skynet stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it is. It's like, you don't ask them to make a copy of themselves and they make a copy of themselves. And there are these synergies when they combine in force. I mean, and we're just nowhere near the peak and it's accelerating rapidly. The quality of the models is accelerating rapidly. Okay. I just, you know, and we're just like, oh yeah. So when are we going to bomb Iran? It's like, wake the fuck up. Okay. This is a planet level challenge. And the only way to prevail is as a global community.
This is like a speech at the end. I like that.
I'm really getting into it.
And okay,
you know what else, Paul?
Tell me.
67 years ago.
So look, I get a lot of this. I mean, I just looked this up and the first chat model came out in November 2022. And as a cognitive scientist, as somebody interested in intelligence and the mind, the existence of AIs that you could talk to, that could do complicated things, that could fucking speak English, is amazing. It's like that I could now, after I'm done talking to you, I could just talk to an AI, have a perfectly normal conversation. And in some ways, it'd be extraordinary. It's just mind-blowing. I would have never thought it would have happened. It's totally mind-blowing. And I'm tremendously excited by it. And here's what a skeptic would say. How have they changed the world since 2022? It's been here, you know, say, you know, 2.5 years. And I don't think they have. They've changed how I do my work. They've changed students cheat more, a lot of million small ways. But it's not like, it's not like printing press. It's not like, you know, internal combustion engine. And what you're saying reasonably enough is, yes, but it's going to happen. If you do a straight line projection, pretty soon it's going to happen. And so one thing you said, I want to sort of zoom in on, mm-hmm. As they say in debates, I'll give you a chance to respond, which is, would you predict that in 2028, this falls under the scope of Freddie's prediction, there'll be no presidential, that there's a reasonable chance there'll be no presidential election in the United States?
If we don't get our policy stuff together, I think the form of government in the U.S. will be unrecognizable. It won't be, you know, I don't know exactly, but if we don't do a better job on the policy front, we're going to look back nostalgically on the Trump years.
that's heavy. So in some way, there's your prediction, because you said before that you hoped that we would, but you are not sure. So it sounds like you think there's a greater than coin flip chance that in 2028, there would be no presidential election. And that's a good bet. I mean, you could win, by the way, without AI, simply Trump, mm-hmm. you know, could somehow wangle. But let's factor that in. That's an interesting bet.
But, you know, on this point of like, what has really changed? I mean, it's a famous feature of people to get used to things very quickly. If I had told you 3 years ago, you know, in San Francisco and any number of other cities, you can just like hail a cab that doesn't have a driver. It'll do a great job. You'll love it. You might have been paying enough attention to say, well, yeah, that might happen, because you would know that Google was testing these cars. But like 5 years ago, I mean, self-driving cars is a huge thing.
But that's not big. Like, you know what's big? Uber Eats is really big. Uber Eats. Used to be, when I was a kid, you could order Chinese, you could order pizza. Mostly you could just order pizza. Now you can order if it used to be only in New York, you could get delivery from everything. Now people order, and the world has transformed as a result. But you're saying AI is going to be bigger than that.
Well, I'm saying, for starters, you can now say to your AI, get me something from Uber Eats and it'll do the rest, okay?
Yes. Look, AI does a lot. I'm an editor of a journal, and AI is writing papers, not good papers, but papers that people are sending to me. I'm mm-hmm. not happy about it. Students could cheat on any exam now, on any take-home essay. I get all that. But that doesn't rise to the level of what you're talking about. What you're talking about, so when you say, you think there's a good chance that because of AI, we have seen our last election in the United States. That is the sort of thing I would say, wow, that would be, that's not Waymo.
I would not say what you just said. There's a good chance what I said was, if we don't, and we won't, you know, we won't completely fail at the policy level, but if we don't fundamentally change our attitude about policy up to and including the implications for international relations, yeah, the country's going to be a total mess in 2028. I mean, there may be an election, and it may be that whoever has the most powerful AI wins, because they penetrate social media and do the persuasive stuff they need to do. But you say, well, where's the impact? Remember, the premise here is that the last 6 months have seen very significant acceleration. It's a little too soon for all of this to hit home.
I get that. There's a podcast I listen to called Hard Fork, mm-hmm. which is a very good one. And they talk a lot about AI, and they make the reasonable argument that often what shows up as a technological innovation and transforms like the programming world and the world of experts takes a few years to percolate. And in support of what you're saying, by the way, when one of the AI companies, I forget which one, came out with extensions, plugins, whatever, that could do legal stuff, legal documents, the mm-hmm. stock market responded by basically kind of shorting law firms.
Law firms, all software companies were hit, and with good reason. And with good reason, because the whole model of software is now in question.
Right. I wouldn't want to be investing in Salesforce right now, or one of these things that does that payroll things, because I don't think people are going to be vibe coding their payroll for a million person company, but I think that time is coming.
Yeah. But there's so many little things that are new that, you know, we start taking things for granted quickly. I mean, for example, the fact that they passed the Turing test, the fact that you have a conversation with it, it seems like it's a super smart, knowledgeable person on the other side. And it's not a machine. I just got a new smartphone, and this is the first time I've ever had the experience where anything I need to figure out about setting it up, something's not working, I just ask the machine itself. I ask the smartphone. I just say, I'm having this problem with you, you know?
Yes.
And I get the tech support I need much faster.
I was in a restaurant last night, and there's a picture on the wall of some actors I kind of recognize. They take a picture of it and ask Chat, what's this from? And he said, Boondock Saints, and named the actors. Fucking amazing. But none of this is what you're talking about. And the scary part, which is the idea of a total, potentially terrible transformation of the world.
There's a piece in, I think, the Wall Street Journal, just within the last couple of days, I probably can't find it, but it's about the fact that right now, workers in all kinds of workplaces are providing the data that's going to put them out of a job. Like they're recording everything they do, every email they send, every this, that, and the other. And that is going to be the training data that creates an agent that can do exactly what they're doing now. This is a Wall Street Journal. Okay. This is not.
Yeah, I get that.
You know, and I think it's maybe the Times, but I think it's a journal. And I will say that it's not like in a year everyone will say, oh, Bob, you were right, because there is this amazing flexibility, right? Like you take these things for granted, you move the goalposts a little. But is what you're saying
that if we checked in 3 years from now, maybe this wouldn't satisfy the kind of bet we're talking about. And then you ask people, have the last 3 years been this extraordinarily tumultuous time? Most reasonable people would say yes. So it's a very vague bet. And maybe we'd have to check the base rates, because I have a feeling people will say this about any 3 years. I think it would have said it after COVID or whatever. But in some way, people would say that. Like, that would be what you'd claim.
If I understand you correctly, I would say yes. Technology is a broad subject. And yet, I just clicked on the technology vertical of the Wall Street Journal. Let me just read you the headlines. Yes, you can vibe code. Here's how to get started. That's the first article. Second one, with a frugal AI strategy, India offers blueprint for developing world. Next article. What's left for humans, referring to, AI. Next article, TikTok's Chinese parent has an app to replace Hollywood. I don't know if you saw this thing, ByteDance. There's a story in the New York Times about this. ByteDance did a clip involving like Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt and Hollywood's freaking out. Okay, next article, when AI bots start bullying humans, even Silicon Valley gets rattled. Next article, meet Anthropic's AI morality teacher. Next article, Pentagon used Anthropic's Claude in Maduro, Venezuela raid. Next article, workers are afraid AI will take their jobs. They're missing the bigger danger. Maybe that's, who knows, maybe that's a contrarian anti-tech. So I just read them in order. And technology includes a lot of shit. Now, maybe the Wall Street Journal is just becoming captive to the hype. And look, it could. I mean, they give you the articles that sell. That's true. But
this is what the argument suggests. Nobody is saying, gee, AI, so nobody's interested in AI. Who would ever think it? Everybody accepts as a premise that there's enormous excitement about AI. That's just the premise. And now the question is, 5 years from now, will it kind of look like now? You know, we'll be talking about stuff, and it'll kind of look like now. Or 5 years from now, will it be like robots marching through the streets and Skynet above us, and you know, something? Or and we're not even talking, because nobody talks to people anymore; they just talk to the avatars. So in some way, I'll ask a meta question. Mm-hmm. Is it a fair demand to make of you? To make to take your strong predictions and suggest you formulate it into something actionable that you could pose. Yeah.
No, I should. I should come up. I should come up with resolution criteria. You're right. And also, we should go into overtime. I want to say something about robots and Elon Musk and overtime. and
what is Elon Musk done now? That lovable scamp.
Well, he's just talking a big robot game, and he was on the famed in AI circles Dorkesh podcast, and so was Dario Amade. Dario was also interviewed by Ross Douthat, who, God bless him, pushed back a little on China.
It was a good discussion. I think Ross Douthat's Interesting Times podcast is great. Yeah. Great interviews.
Yeah. And also in overtime, people find out what exactly my connection to Jeffrey Epstein was, and why the frequency of your appearances on this podcast is sadly going to decline in the near term. All this and more, folks. If you become a paid subscriber to Non-Zero Newsletter or the Small Potatoes Newsletter.
Okay.
And thanks, everybody who's stuck with us this far. I hope I've turned you into, doomer isn't the word, but a concerned citizen.